For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe it. USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rate of Trail Radio, episode 540, coming to you on Wednesday, May 22nd. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including playing some buy or sell and the biggest questions going into the 2024 USC football season. We're also going to be talking about the Maryland Terrapins in this week's segment of A Big 10 Minutes. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy, email address, rainoftroyfanside.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227, Second Wind Sports Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Should we tell people what's going on? What's going on in the studio?
Should we just
leave it to be a surprise?
I think we should warn them. Well, and of course, Jessie is doing her thing where she's laying in the middle of the floor and out of frame. But I would cherish every bit of Jessie that you get to see on the episode today.
Yeah.
Because her time as the show mascot is
coming
to an end.
Yeah, unfortunately for old Jessie. Yeah, she's just not going to be on camera anymore.
Yeah.
She's going to be camera shy. She's still going to be the mascot. She's just probably not going to be on camera anymore.
She'll still be in the room with us. Just you won't see her.
Yeah, you'll tell. You'll be able to figure this out next week when we talk more and join you guys next week, or hopefully you join us next week live on the old YouTube. So we're going to be redesigning our little studio setups here. So Jessie might not be in the frame anymore. Probably mm-hmm. not.
Definitely won't be
yeah.
in the frame anymore. So, unless we got like a third camera that we just put like a little Jessie camera.
That's my dream, actually. Just have a little Jessie cam, just like toggle to Jessie. But yeah. But you know what the comments on the chat would be? Just shut up and just show us Jessie.
Yes.
We don't care what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody cares what you think about third down conversions.
I know it.
Just show us the cute dog. Anyways, here we are. Alicia, a lot of stuff going on, including, have you noticed the NBA playoffs going on?
I have noticed.
Even though your Clippers are no longer in it?
That's the best time of NBA season for me, when I don't have to worry about the ways that my Clippers are disappointing me.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, this is the perfect time to like sign up for DraftKings, because DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. DraftKings is offering a no-sweat bet sign-up for new users. New customers who sign up with the code RAINOFTROY and deposit at least $5 will receive a no-sweat bet of up to $1,500 bonus on their first wager. This means if you place a first bet of $50 and you lose, you will receive a $50 in credit bonus bet straight to your account, up to $1,500. You also receive one single game parlay reward every day using our code RANDOMTROY. Not only gets you these great bonuses, but also it directly supports the podcast. So with the NBA playoffs heating up, now is the perfect time to do that. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code RANDOMTROY to maximize that first bet. The offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. Alicia, one of those eligible states, Maryland, who we're going to talk about more later on this episode.
Indeed.
Yeah. So get ready for that. Once we start talking about Maryland in the Big Ten Minute, that's the perfect time to join DraftKings with the code Reign of Troy. Alicia, we got a bunch of news. Not really a bunch, but a little bit of news. Let's get to it.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Let's start with the schedule. Last week, we found out that USC and Michigan was going to be 12:30 p.m. Pacific in September on Saturday the 21st. USC and Michigan on CBS. First 12:30 p.m. September kickoff on CBS since?
I know this answer. Do you want me to give it?
Go ahead.
Auburn.
Auburn, 2003. But today we found out even more news. USC's Rutgers game is moving to Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific. Yes, USC and Rutgers on Friday, October 25th, moving to Friday nights, 8 p.m. Pacific on Fox to follow up the World Series as a doubleheader with the World Series. This is going to create a short week after the Maryland game, but it's extra prep going into the Washington game the following week. Washington, Oregon, UCLA will each get two Friday night games, SC only getting one, but it's an 8 p.m. kickoff on a Friday night. Alicia, I was told by a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of people on message boards, that only the Pac-12 was stupid enough to play on a Friday, and the days of SC playing night games at the Coliseum were over. Alicia, what gives?
As Kenny in the chat said, Alicia, take a victory lap knowing we'd still play night games. We're vindicated. Yeah, it turns out that the Pac-12 wasn't being stupid by having night games. The Pac-12 had broadcast partners, and those broadcast partners wanted to broadcast games on Fridays at night. Well, Fridays and at night. And guess what? The Big Ten has broadcast partners, and they want to fill every possible broadcast window with content that will bring in money.
Mm-hmm.
If they just broadcast the World Series on that Friday night, they would break in a lot of money, but they would not have ratings for anything that followed the World Series. It would just be a drop-off and dud.
Yeah.
Now they have additional content to put on after the World Series to extend their earning power. And this will continue to happen on Saturday nights as well, folks. I mean, we can't predict exactly which games will or won't be 8 o'clock kickoffs at the Coliseum on a Saturday because we don't know what other games will be factored in, whether or not UCLA or Washington or Oregon will get those slots. But somebody's going to get that slot every single week. And I can tell you right now, September 7th, Utah State, September 28th, Wisconsin, November 16th, Nebraska. Those are all, circle those dates as potential 8 p.m. Coliseum Saturday kickoffs. It's just the way, like, this wasn't a Pac-12 issue. This was a Fox ESPN broadcast issue. They want to air those games in the Pac-12 After Dark time slot, and they will continue to do so now that they have Pacific Coast teams who are available to them. I think USC fans, we've said this forever. 8 o'clock starts for a game are not unusual to every other time zone. Most other time zones, that's their prime time.
Yeah.
So fans in
look at Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football kicks off at like what, 8:30 in on the East Coast.
Yeah. So this is not an unusual time slot to be in if you're just thinking about when a game kicks off. So I get that people think it's an inconvenience, but also it's an inconvenience that is not unique to USC playing in that in that time slot. In fact, USC has more rarely experienced that than most others.
Right.
There's another there is an advantage to this, which is logistically, number one, a game starting that late means nobody can complain about not being able to get to the Coliseum after work.
Yeah, especially when the Dodgers are not going to be playing because it's October and we know that they don't win in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, USC will be at a disadvantage this year with travel. Travel is going to be very tough going across the country for these road trips.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of this is that you will end up with teams like Rutgers who get the short end of the stick having to come out to Los Angeles for a game on Friday that begins at 11 o'clock their time.
Yeah.
Like, that is not a normal, that is, the coaches will have to plan for that. They'll have to figure out changing up their routine so that they can deal with such a late start.
Mm-hmm.
So USC will have scheduling and road disadvantages, but USC's home opponents will also have disadvantages, and that's a pretty darn big one as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and also, if you were thinking of moving a game to a Friday at 8 p.m., off the top, like right off the dome, like Rutgers would be the team that you'd be okay with doing that for, right? I would assume. Now, I don't think Rutgers has been somewhat decent the last year or so with Schiano back in head coach and all that stuff. But so they're not the pushover that they historically have been per se. But they're also not necessarily a game that you're worried about on SC's schedule as it stands right now, right? So I think this is not, you know, SC pushing the Penn State game to Friday at 8 p.m. And those big games against the big brands are not going to be that late on TV. But when it's a team like Rutgers, where SC is going to carry the brand going into that game, the brand value, yeah, this is always going to be a possibility. It also helps that This is one game. One game. Yes, it's a short week after the Maryland game, and the travel there might be a little wonky. But I think having the extra day going up to Washington, I think will be a good thing. SC is used to playing on Friday nights at this point. I don't think it's a crazy thing. The Big Ten, by the way, has been playing on Friday nights for the last several years also. So
yes, this is not like the NFL is also expanding the days of the week that they're playing games on. Everyone is trying to find those mm-hmm. extra slots. College football is not any different.
Yeah. Well, look at this from the TV's perspective. If you're on Big Fox, you can either show reruns of Cops or you can have USC playing a national television game, nationally yeah. televised game after a World Series game.
Even if you get minimal...
You take the football.
Even if you get minimal eyeballs, they will be more yeah. than you would get with a showing of like Blue Bloods on Friday night.
Yeah, and even if this was FSN, FS1? Even if this was FS1, would you rather show like boxing from Biloxi, Mississippi?
Yeah.
From some weird federation you've never heard of? Or would you rather show a Big Ten football game? You'd rather show a Big Ten football
Absolutely.
Game. Like it's very simple. It's very simple. All right, other news here. USC continues to mine Wyoming. Wyoming changing their names. No longer the Cowboys. They are now the Wyoming Future Trojans. Because next up from the Cowboy to Trojan transition is... Gavin Meyer. He is committed in the transfer portal. Nose tackle, 6'4", 285. He had a 78.4 PFF grade last year for the Cowboys, and he comes to give USC a lot of depth up front defensively.
Yeah, I think at this stage, USC is just in such desperate need for bodies up front on that defensive line that pretty much anybody would feel like like a positive addition just from a pure depth standpoint. The depth is so poor, especially on those interior spots, that I think that you have to look at Gavin Meyer as somebody who will come in and see a lot of playing time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you have to sort of, I think you temper your expectations a little bit for him coming in from Wyoming, playing
a Bird and Pregnon were starters.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think that I'm not trying to speak down on Wyoming. I think my bigger issue with the Wyoming of it all is that he was playing nose tackle at 6'4", 285 for Wyoming, and I don't know that you can have a 285-pound nose tackle in the Big Ten.
That sounds more like a 3 or 5 tech.
Right. So I'm very curious what they're going to do with him in terms of where he will play on the line. Do they get him into the strength program and tell him to beef up and see if you can add 15 pounds and see what you do? Do they get him in and say, okay, we're not going to have you at nose tackle, but you're going to give us some more depth, at one of those other techniques and see what happens there? Because USC needs the depth across the board. So it's an interesting addition, a positive addition. I look forward to being pleasantly surprised. I'm not saying that he's going to be the savior of this defensive line.
Yeah.
But you certainly want additions like this, a veteran, team captain type profile. I think this is a good pickup. Not the best pickup USC could have gotten in this position, and I think that's why it's very tempered, because you missed out on the guy from Michigan State and the other sort of big 300-pound defensive tackles that have been coming down the pipe. But you still got to add somebody, and this is pretty solid addition.
Yeah, 100%. We'll see how it all comes to be for USC's defensive line. We tested early on, of course, this season with LSU and Michigan early on in September. Let's get to talking about the 2024 Trojans and do some buy or sell. We haven't done buy or sell in a while, and we always sort of enjoy those segments, so let's get to it. Buy or sell, it starts with our first buy or sell question of the 2024 season. Alicia, is this year's Big Ten schedule is harder than last year's Pac-12 slate. Buy or sell?
I am big selling this. And there are a lot of reasons why. I'm not saying that I look at this schedule and say it's going to be a cakewalk. I think that there are more toss-up games with teams that could be decent, if not good, on this schedule than last year, where it was very, sort of heavyweights or featherweights. But the heavyweights that USC faces on this schedule are not even close the way that we're projecting out for this season. I think you're going to have a lot to say on this, so I'm going to sort of boil my feelings down to one particular area, and it's quarterback. Last season on the Pac-12 schedule, USC faced quarterbacks of the ilk of Michael Penix and Bo Nix and Noah Fifita and Sam Hartman and Shedeur Sanders. Those guys were all top 25 at least quarterbacks in college football.
Yeah.
Last year. This year, USC's schedule, I looked at the quarterbacks, and I think it's a question between Garrett Nussmeier, Will Rogers, and Drew Aller for who is the best quarterback on USC's schedule. And there's like Alex Orji for Michigan. Maybe it depends on who wins that battle. Maybe Dylan Raiola if he comes in for Nebraska and makes waves. Tyler Van Dyke's transferring from Miami to Wisconsin. And then Minnesota picked up a really, really prolific quarterback from the FCS, Max Brosmer. So like there are quarterbacks who could be pretty good to decent as well. But of those names that I just named, would any of them outrank any of the five best quarterbacks that USC faced in 2023? I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
And for that reason alone, like, I just think that this schedule, you can't look at it and say that last year's was not harder, not a bigger challenge than what this presents.
Yeah, the offensive firepower that SC played last year, not just a quarterback, but you look at the playmakers, Romo Dunze, right? All the receivers that Arizona has, the guys that, that Oregon can throw at you with Tony Franklin, right? Like all those dudes that SC faced, they're not going to face on the offensive side of it. This schedule that SC has this year, I'm going to sell it on it being necessarily harder. I think if anything, I think it's similar in a completely different way, because SC has to play both national title game participants on the road at Michigan, at Washington. On the surface, that looks scary. But this is a Washington team that is completely different coaching staff. They lost so many dudes, so many transfers. The players that they were going to have coming back to be the stalwarts of this team, like their starting corner, went to rival Oregon. He transferred away, right? Like so many guys are not there in Seattle anymore. And it's going to be a completely different team. You don't know what to expect at all from Washington going into this year. SC misses the two Big Ten teams that improved the most this offseason, Ohio State and Oregon. SC misses both of them. Those might be the two scariest teams in the conference. SC does not play them. They get Wisconsin, Penn State, and Nebraska, who I think are all three teams to be worried about. Penn State, we know that they're going to go 10-2 every year, which means they're probably going to give SC a whole lot of trouble, right? You get them at home at the Coliseum. You don't have to go to Beaver Stadium. Like, you don't have to go into that whiteout situation. Wisconsin and Nebraska, two teams who could be mediocre, or they could take big steps in year two under their head coaches. Well, SC gets them at home. They don't have to go and face them at 9 a.m. in, scary, hostile places like Lincoln and Madison. They get them at home in the Coliseum. Those questionable games, they get at home. The flip side of this is, yes, you play the two national title teams. Also, the ass end of the Big Ten, SC only gets one of the four teams that was not bowl eligible last year in the Big Ten, and that's Nebraska. But again, we talk about Nebraska in year two under Matt Rhule could be somewhat competitive. So that part I think is different than last year. I think the bottom part of the schedule I think is harder, because last year the first six games off rip were extremely winnable for SC. We talked about it all off season. SC was going to start 6-0. We all knew they were going to start 6-0, and they did. But it's the second half of the season last year that was so difficult, a stretch in which SC went 1-5, had the season completely crumble, and they went 1-5 and lost to four ranked teams. That kind of brutal slate is not on the schedule as it stands right now. Wisconsin, Penn State, and Nebraska could be very, very good teams. But as it stands right now, only Penn State is a team that I think is going to be ranked and scary as it stands. So I think if anything, this is similar to last year's schedule. I don't think it's harder. I think it's only harder if you look at all the teams as looking at them in the 2023 category, which is looking at Michigan as a national title winning team, not the team that just got, what was it, like 11 draft picks or whatever they had.
Yeah.
And lost their head coach. And Washington that has Penix and Odunze and all that. Yeah, if that was the Washington team that SC was facing, I think this would be a much scarier schedule than it is.
Washington's too deep from that championship, from that title game run.
It's like everybody's
literally
gone.
Is gone. There is no one from that too deep that is left.
Yeah, and so I'm not saying this is an easy schedule, but this is very much in line with the schedule that SC plays on a yearly basis, because SC always plays tough schedules. I don't think this is the hardest schedule they've ever faced. And they get LSU at the perfect time, which is week one, before they've been able to really settle in and replace Jaden Daniels at quarterback. So it's not an easy schedule by any means, but I don't think that it's harder and is noticeably more difficult in that sense. Let's get to the second buy or sell, which is Lincoln Riley is on the hot seat going into the 2024 season. What say you? Year three, USC. He followed up a season in which he went 11-1 in the regular season with one in which he went 7-5.
Whose hot seat are we talking about? I think he is already on the hot seat in the eyes of a lot of fans. But in the eyes of the people who actually matter, the actual hot seat that matters, it's a giant sell. The man signed a 10-year contract with a massive, massive buyout. Even if he struggles this year, he's not on the hot seat. USC is in for the long haul with Lincoln Riley. And if this year doesn't go to plan, there will be a very... I'm unsatisfying but still reasonable explanation of first year new defensive staff replacing a Heisman winning quarterback, number one overall quarterback, still trying to rebuild the offensive line, first year facing a Big Ten schedule with all of that travel, with all, like, I think there are built in excuses if I mean, I don't want to have to be giving them, but this is not the season where a coach under the circumstances that Lincoln Riley signed his contract to USC comes under any pressure. Like, at worst, I think the pressure is to, again, maybe scapegoat some offensive assistants this time around if things don't go to plan. But Lincoln Riley is not even close to being in danger of being on a hot seat from a realistic perspective.
Yeah, I too am going to sell this strictly from the sense of I think that gutting the defensive staff has sort of bought him a year there. If he would have kept the defensive staff and stayed with Grinch and just rode it out into this year too, which would have been extremely nonsensical, but let's just say that he would have done that, then yes, he's absolutely on the hot seat. Like, put up or shut up, like, this is what you signed up for, you're going down with the ship, etc. But I think that you're right. So much of it is in terms of his reputation nationally and not necessarily and his reputation with the fans versus where he stands in the program. I think that a poor season this year, if SC is not bowl eligible or something like that, I don't think that looks good upon him at all. But I think that goes into next year as do or die. I think that depending on how this season goes, is how hot the seat truly is. And maybe when the season ends, you look at it and say he's entering the hot seat, but I cannot see it as it stands right now. Going into this season, no, he's not in the hot seat. Especially when he made all those defensive changes. And, you know, whether or not they work, he at least made them, which I think buys him, you know, more time and more goodwill. At least among SC fans.
His hot seat season for me is 2025.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Let's go to the next one. USC will struggle to become bowl eligible in 2024. Buy or sell?
I am selling this also big time. I think that USC's struggles, if they have any this year, will not be in the bowl eligibility range. It'll be in the how much further is USC from being competitive for the top of the Big Ten. I think there are easily six wins in this schedule. Will they all come immediately? Like, I don't know. Like we've talked about in the past, this schedule is balanced in a really nice way, but that could mean that, you know, it takes, you know, it's a little while until USC gets to bowl eligibility, but I'm pretty confident that USC will get there.
Yeah.
I think that you run into trouble if you start the season, like, I don't know that you can start the season 1-3 and say you're going to be fine with bowl eligibility. And that is certainly a possibility, a worst case scenario. But even then, I think there are too many winnable games on this schedule. And as much as people are down on USC, I still think it's a massive overreaction to think that this team will be incapable of reaching that very, very low low mark.
Can you see SC going 1-3 against Minnesota, Rutgers, Nebraska, and Maryland?
No.
Until you do, then I'm selling this.
Yeah.
The way I see it, this schedule does not have a lot of if you sort this out to USC will win, USC should win, could win, and should lose, there is only one game on this entire schedule where I think USC will win. I would bet my life on it, and that's Utah State. Mm-hmm. Everything else is almost in the should win category. SC should beat Wisconsin. They should beat Minnesota. They should beat Maryland. They should beat Rutgers. They should beat Nebraska. They should beat UCLA. Will they win all those games? Maybe not, but they're probably going to be favored in all of those games when it comes to the Vegas stuff. And, you know, Sagar in the chat says the over-under is 7.5 wins on most sportsbooks, so sell this. Yeah, I think that, you know, even when you go to the next tier up, the could wins, Penn State, Notre Dame, Washington, LSU, I think realistically you're probably thinking the SC splits those four, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would genuinely be surprised if USC goes 0-4 against those four.
Yeah, and so if you say that Michigan's a loss off rip and Utah State is a win and you put the others in a could and should win category, I still think SC should get to six wins, no problem. I think that this should. SC was 7-5 last year in the regular season, and that was so out of character for a Lincoln Riley team.
With the most horrific defense that my eyes have ever seen.
Yeah, and the defense should be better, and they're facing offenses that are significantly not as good as last year.
Yes.
The defenses will be better, but the offenses, no. There's no Bo Nix. There's no Michael Penix. They have to face this upcoming year. No Jitter Sanders, right? So, I'm gonna say sell on that one as well. Let's go to the next one. Caleb Williams will be impossible to replace at quarterback. What say you? Buy or sell?
I'm buying this.
All right.
In the sense that Caleb Williams is the best quarterback I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Play college football. Certainly, yeah. Play for USC. He is a unique, special, gifted talent who is not replaceable in the things that he was able to do as a Trojan. USC's next quarterback, whether it's Miller Moss or somebody else, will not be as mobile as Caleb Williams, will not have as big of an arm as Caleb Williams, will not have the playmaking prowess that Caleb Williams brought to the table, will not be capable of replicating half of the did he just do that kind of plays that Caleb Williams is able to produce. That doesn't mean that USC can't insert a perfectly capable quarterback who can lead them to victories. That is a whole other question for me. The question is Caleb Williams replaceable? He is not. Does replacing Caleb Williams at the Caleb Williams level equal USC being fine on offense? No, that's not the case. USC can be perfectly fine on offense with a quarterback far below Caleb Williams's level.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, like, I don't expect to see somebody look like the best quarterback I've ever seen in Cardinal and Gold play football for USC again for a long time. You know?
Yeah, I'm going to sell this strictly because of Lincoln Riley's history. I agree with you that I don't think you should expect someone to be as good as Caleb Williams, whether or not that's Miller Moss or if it's Mayava. Like, don't expect Caleb Williams' ability. Don't necessarily expect a Heisman Trophy winner, etc. But I go back to Lincoln Riley at quarterback and how every single time he's had to replace a Heisman winner, he's found a way to do it. And even if he doesn't replace a Heisman winner with a Heisman winner, which he's done with Kyler Murray replacing Baker Mayfield, he's done it in a way to replace the production. And I think that Caleb Williams' production at SC was not the hallmark. Like, that was not the untouchable feat. The untouchable feat for Caleb Williams was his ability, were the wow factor, his intangibles, his ability to make plays. It wasn't strictly the numbers themselves. We've talked about this before, but like, you look at the passer rating, like Caleb Williams' passer rating was really no different than what, you know, Cody Kessler was putting up at SC. His production in terms of numbers was not overly revolutionary that way. And I think those numbers can be replaced. So that's where I sell this, because Baker Mayfield left. Lincoln Riley replaced him with Kyler Murray, who threw 42 touchdowns and 7 picks. Kyler Murray left. He replaced him with Jalen Hurts, who threw 32 touchdowns and 8 picks and had a quarterback rating of .91. He left, and in comes Spencer Rattler. Oh no, Spencer Rattler, the horrific bad quarterback for Oklahoma. 28 touchdowns, 7 picks, quarterback rating of .72. You absolutely, if that's what Miller Moss's numbers are, sign me up right now. Like, that's what you absolutely take those immediately. And I think the only reason to say that, to be concerned about the production wise of not being able to replace what Caleb Williams has done strictly in terms of production, is that Miller Moss on paper, along with Mayava, neither one of those is overly exciting at quarterback compared to having Kyler Murray, who was a blue chip quarterback, on the bench. And Spencer Rattler was a five-star guy just waiting at Oklahoma as well. Moss and Mayava are not five-star quarterbacks coming out of high school. They're just waiting for, you know, their spot in the same way. Miller Moss is like a four-star guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think he'll be absolutely productive in his own right. But that's not enough to sell for me, because Lincoln Riley has done it with every quarterback he's had. So why wouldn't you believe that until he fails? I'm not gonna say that he will in quarterback. So
yeah, I think you're right there. And I think also there's a little bit of like a, there's some revisionist history about Miller Moss's level as a recruit, because Miller Moss was a top 75 prospect.
Yeah, I'm just saying he wasn't a unanimous five-star guy. Yeah,
like what's weird is that Lincoln Riley has sort of had a string of five-star guys, or
yes,
or like the national title winning quarterback transferring over.
Comparatively,
like, yeah,
Miller Moss isn't as exciting as those guys were as prospects.
Yes, but like when you look at who Miller Moss was as a recruit coming in, like
he was no slouch.
No slouch at all.
Yeah.
I think that Miller Moss was hurt by us seeing him. The only times we sort of would see him were in garbage time or in like spring game situations, and he didn't ever impress in those in that context. But his reputation has been hurt by him always working behind a really bad second and third string offensive line too. So,
right.
You know, I don't know that bodes super well for a season where there's a lot of question marks on USC's first team offensive line, but I've been guilty of this as well. The revisionist history around what level of a recruit, of a prospect he was. He's still a high level prospect.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I think that he'll be able to produce. We saw it in the Holiday Bowl. Absolutely. I think that where Miller Moss doesn't fare well in terms of that stuff is strictly just comparing him to an unattainable tier.
Yeah. Which he does not have Caleb Williams' skill set, and most quarterbacks don't. So
right. But we've talked about it before. Would you take a Cody Kessler? In most years, yes, you take a Cody Kessler.
I'd take a Cody with Lincoln Riley. If you gave Lincoln Riley a Cody Kessler, you'd win a hell of a lot of games.
Yes, especially if the defense improves.
Yes.
Right? Like, absolutely. 100%. Let's go to two more. Next one is talking about the defense. One more. There's three more. One more before we get to the defense. LSU is a must-win game to start the 2024 season. Buy or sell that?
I don't want to buy this, but I'm low-key buying it.
Wow.
In terms of vibe check.
Okay.
At the beginning of the show, we sort of talked about that Auburn thing where the last time USC was on CBS at 12:30, it was facing, you know,
Michigan game. Yeah.
Yeah. For the Michigan. Oh, right. The Michigan game. Yeah. But it was, you know, the concept of going into a season with an SEC opponent,
sort of uncertain where you stand because you're replacing
a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
With somebody who could be good, but you don't know for sure yet. Those sort of weird expectations. The defense.
Miller Moss and Matt Leinart comparable, like in terms of.
I would guess recruiting profile would be similar, right?
Yeah, in the sense of like, because when the perception going into that year, I remember thinking that like, at the time I wanted Brandon Hance to win the job,
yeah.
Like or Billy Hart to win the job, like Leinart was not necessarily the big name. The big sexy name there. I remember being at the Sun Devil Stadium in 2003, third game of the year, people sitting behind me yelling for John David Booty to start as a true freshman.
Yeah, it's funny how perception changes. But the way I see it is USC has so many questions coming into the season. So many. And so many of them could turn toxic potentially if the season doesn't start well.
Yeah.
And it's a situation where like the offense needs to look capable.
Mm-hmm.
The defense needs to look significantly improved, maybe unfairly significantly improved, considering that USC is going up against a Brian Kelly offense with a quarterback that has a decent amount of potential. And LSU's offense might be really good this year. They're losing a Heisman Trophy winner, but, you know, that doesn't mean that their offense needs to fall off a cliff, just like USC's offense doesn't need to fall off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's unfair to call it must win, but I'm still doing it because the tenor, I mean, I sit here and say right now, Lincoln Riley's seat is not hot, but the belief in the program, the confidence in the program, a loss to start the season
the hype turns up and down really quickly.
I think the negativity would turn very quickly. I think conversations in the national media would turn towards Lincoln Riley and asking that question of hot seat, is he, you know, a fraud or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Mostly, I think this is such a huge opportunity for USC. Like, it feels must win, not because you can't lose it, but because winning it propels you into a season that suddenly everything feels positive and everything feels like, okay, we're going to be fine. Deep breaths, everybody, and here
we
go.
You beat LSU, and then the Michigan game feels like house money at that
yes.
point.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. I think that I am with you, except I'm not going to literally buy that it's a must win. I think it's a must play well. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Like it's a must show well. I think it's an important game for SC to look good. You cannot start the game with the 50-6 loss.
No.
Like you did against Alabama in 2016. Mind you, we know that SC won the Rose Bowl, and if you win the Rose Bowl, I guess you can you can make do. You start 1-3 this year, and you still go to the playoff. I guess who cares? Kudos to you for doing that. But that's not a realistic scenario, right? So I don't think any Week One game in now in which there's a 12-game playoff, especially against a ranked team, is must win. Your schedule. The importance of every game slightly lessened because of the expanded playoff. So I don't think it can be a must win, but it's a must play well in the sense of everything that you're saying. I think that you start the tone, you start feeling good about the defense. We just got dinner with our buddy Kenny, right? And he was talking about how, you know, the defense is going to be a big question mark. But the weird thing is LSU had a great offense last year. If LSU was just a 40-point offense, it might not be the best game for the defense because they might just give up 35, 40 points anyways because this is a really good offense, even though they're replacing Jaden Daniels, their Heisman Trophy winning quarterback.
This game could just be destined to be a shootout.
It could be.
Without having to draw conclusions about either side, yeah. The profile of both of these teams coming in,
it could be
high over under.
But I think in a perfect world, you'd like to just see signs that the defense is better and that you'd like to play well. And ideally, obviously, you'd want to win the game. But I think this is a must play well. If you end up going to the end and losing 24-21, but you firmly stamped that you belong on the same field as LSU, and I don't see that is a crime at all. And then if you do the same thing against Michigan, and even if you start 1-2, I don't think it's a crime. I think of anything, Wisconsin, fourth game of the year, Big Ten opener at home. If anything, that's the must win. Because even if you do start 1-2, you can't snowball. And that's where you need to really start getting your footing right that way. Let's go to the next one, talking about the defense finally here. This is the best defensive coaching staff since the Pete Carroll era. Buy or sell?
I'm selling this statement in May.
Okay.
When I say sell, I'm not saying that this defensive staff couldn't be the best defensive coaching staff since the Pete Carroll era, because I think there's a definite possibility of that.
Mm-hmm.
I am selling making that claim in May.
Yes.
Or June or July or August or even September. Well, I don't know. September, if USC does really, really well against LSU and Michigan, then maybe I'll be ready to make that declaration. But USC's most recent, like last 5 years, defenses have all been pretty horrific. Like mediocre is probably the best that USC's defense has been since I don't know, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that those staffs, like the USC didn't have good staffs before that. The 2011 staff with Monty Kiffin and Joe Barry and Ed Orgeron, that's a pretty damn good staff.
Yeah, I'm with you here.
I know that Monty Kiffin sort of kills his reputation in 2012, but like, he's still a he was still a good defensive coordinator. And then 2013, Clancy Pendergast, when he was a good defensive coordinator, Ed Orgeron and Mike Eckler, not a bad group. The 2014 staff, like if you had kept that staff together with Wilcox and Wilson and Peter Sermon and Keith Hayward, like you had kept that staff together for a couple of years and sort of seen what they could have done. Maybe, I don't know. These weren't terrible staffs.
I am going to do the softest buy ever here, but I don't really believe this. So hear me out. I think I'm with you in general that as it's like gun to my head right now, it's really a sell, but I'm just going to make the argument for the buy. Because I think you're right. I think that Lane Kiffin's original staff in 2010-11, like, very good. Joe Barry at linebackers, and you had Monty Kiffin, the Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator, and Ed Orgeron and all that. Those are reasons to feel good. The 2013 team we talked about in early September before SC gave up 62 to ASU, even though there was, I think, a punt return and a pick six.
That was such a weird game, too.
But that defensive staff at the beginning of the 2013 season, we raved about. Mm-hmm. We thought they were SC was so good on defense because they had gotten Clancy Pendergast and his five, what we called the 5-2 at the time, mm-hmm. right? And you had Orgeron and Mike Eckler and like all those guys. But I think when it comes down to it, like where I'm hesitant to say that this is a buy is that Danton Lynn, I think we all see the potential, but I think it's a bit presumptive to say that he's the best defensive coordinator that SC has had since Pete Carroll, because he doesn't have the resume of Clancy Pendergast or Todd Orlando or even Alex Grinch or
certainly Monty Kiffin,
like in terms of his experience level. I think we all see the potential as being higher. I think where I buy this is that USC's coaching staffs on defense have all been sort of very similar. There are guys that are high upside guys that could pan out well, and there are guys that might not. And what I like about this staff, and the thing that I think makes this the most intriguing staff, if not the best, if we're going to get weird with the semantics here, is that the staff that SC has put together on defense this year is not a bunch of like heavyweight recruiters. I think it's great to have a bunch of heavyweight recruiters like an Ed Orgeron, like Williams, like these guys that can just go out there and recruit five-star talents, and you need those guys. But like we saw last year and the last few years with SC in the secondary, you know, Dante Williams is not necessarily a great defensive backs coach. He's just a great recruiter. And I think when you look at the guys who SC has brought in on defense, Danton Lynn, Eric Henderson, Matt Entz, Doug Belk, the first hallmark that you say about any of those guys is that they're great coaches. Mm-hmm. Or that they can be great coaches in terms of Danton Lynn, right?
Well, but that's,
none of them are known recruiters right off the, like, right at the beginning.
Right.
First thought.
Yes, but the giant question marks I have is that I think that if you look just at the positional staff and you disregard the defensive coordinator, because we all know the big question marks there,
mm-hmm.
this could be an
they're elite, all overqualified
elite. But yes. Is there being overqualified? There's a double edged sword there because Matt Entz has not been a linebackers coach for a long time.
That's fair, down in the weeds.
Eric Henderson has never coached at the college level.
Sure.
You know, it's Doug Belk is coming off, a failed stint as a defensive coordinator. Does he want to be a secondary coach? Is he going to be what he used to be in that regard? Like I have very, very high hopes for the staff.
Yeah.
But there are so many uncertainties, unknowns that I'm just not ready to make any premature declarations.
No, I think you're right.
By the way, it's really funny. College football has added an extra coach, so this is partly why. But like, I was looking back at USC's coaching staffs in the past. Like, there were years when there were like three defensive coaches on the staff. This is five defensive coaches.
Yeah,
on that alone, you already have more firepower there in terms of potential coaching talent.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the softest buy in the world for me because I think I'm buying into the potential. But and to your point, yeah, you sell it because right now is probably right. So let's go into the last one. Can USC win the Big Ten? Buy or sell?
I'm buying it because I experienced the 2016 season. And
I actually think this is a case of optimistic, Alicia.
This is can win the Big Ten, not will win the Big Ten. My argument is this. There is a chance that looking at this schedule, there is a lot of potential 2016 going on. LSU, Michigan, Penn State, Washington, and UCLA could all be legitimately and significantly worse than they were last year. If that is the case, if that comes to pass, then USC can easily roll to the Big Ten title game. And then it's a one-off. And then it's you know, I wouldn't necessarily take today, I wouldn't take USC over Ohio State or Oregon in that game, but also, who knows? At that point, USC has rolled through a schedule, proven that you know how to win football games, and will have a chance, whatever that may be. So yeah. That's where I'm going. If it's 2016 all over again, then yes.
Yeah, I hear you. I think if the question is, can SC get to the Big Ten championship game, I think I could buy SC's possibilities there. There's no way I'm buying SC's chances to win the conference. I think SC can have a good 9-3 season. Maybe a surprise 10-2. I am not going to buy anything more than that as it stands right now. All your stuff is valid, but as it stands right now, a win against Michigan, all things considered, even with Michigan changing so much of their coaching staff and retaining a lot of guys too, but losing so many guys to the NFL and all the roster turnover that they've had, it would still be a shock if SC won that game. And all things considered, the Ohio State and Oregon rosters are not rosters that SC can compete with at this moment. As it stands, maybe SC's roster ends up being way better than we think it is and whatnot. But right now, no, I don't think SC can win the Big Ten, but I think that they can make it interesting, especially if things break their way, like you said, with teams maybe not being as good as they were last year. So that's where we stand on buy or sell. Let us know your thoughts. Shoot us your emails, randetroit@fanside.com, and leave us your messages, 818-643-7227. Alicia, it is time for your favorite segment, my favorite segment, suddenly. Big 10 minutes. We're going to do this about Maryland. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right.
A big 10 minutes.
Let's talk about the University of Maryland, College Park. Founded in 1856 as the Maryland Agricultural College. From 1916 to 1920, they were the Maryland State College from College Park, Maryland. Where do you stand on universities that have like weird university type names for cities, like State College, College Station, College Park?
I don't have an opinion on this.
I always find it weird.
It's just the name.
Like, come up with a name for your... I understand that these cities, like, exist because the college was there.
Yeah, but, like, this is how cities get named all the time because of the things that are around the city.
No, I... Right. Like, there's a dry... There's a dry canyon, creek. And so it's called Arroyo Seco. Yeah,
yes.
I get it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of... They're the Terrapins, the Terps. Alicia, we have finally gotten to a team that has a animal mascot genuinely, and that this is not some sort made up term.
Yeah.
The nickname, this is from Wikipedia. The nickname was coined in 1932 by Harry C. Curly Bird, the then school football coach and later the school's president. So no newspaper named him, which is kind of cool. This is somebody literally on in the program, Curly Bird. Previously, Maryland's teams are known as the Old Liners, a reference to the state's nickname, the Old Line States.
Low-key, you know, love that.
It's kind of cool. It's until when you realize what the Mason-Dixon line really is about, and then you're like,
Okay, never mind. No, hate that.
Okay.
Nope. Sorry. Context matters. Nope.
However, the school newspaper, the Diamondback, wanted a better nickname, and Bird thought Terrapins was a good choice because of the Diamondback Terrapins that are endemic to the Chesapeake Bay region. I like that. Local animal.
I like local fauna as like a reason for nickname, mascot names.
Local flora works too. Yeah, but local fauna, absolutely. There was an article on the Diamondback, the school newspaper. 17 UMD facts every Terp should know before enrolling. Most of these are very simple. You can see the Washington Monument from the top of Maryland Stadium. UMD has 6 libraries. Ooh, big deal. But I think when you get to number 12 and 13, it really starts getting good, Alicia. Number 12, UMD has its own farm. It's featured a lot of cool stuff over the years, like a living cow with a hole in its side.
Wait, that's where the cow was? Do you know the story of this cow?
No!
The cow has a hole in its side so that they can reach in, and like it's part of research where they can reach in and like see the contents of its stomach studying the digestive system of the cow. Yeah,
give me the heebie-jeebs.
Yeah, it's crazy. Ooh. It's wild.
Nope. Now the only hole in a cow I want is a hole in a bite after I've bitten into a burger or something. No. Okay, fact number 13. Queen Elizabeth II of England attended her first American football game at UMD.
That is wild.
That's kind
of
cool.
Of all of the colleges she could have gone to watch her first American football game, Maryland being the one is pretty outstanding.
And you know she called it Maryland.
Maryland.
But whatever. Let's get to the fight song. Fight, fight, fight for Maryland. Alicia, this might be, like, we need to pull up the old Iowa lyrics. Very similar.
Yeah.
Ready? Fight, fight, fight for Maryland. Honor now her name again. Push up the score. Keep fighting on for more. For Maryland. Go Terps! And we will fight, fight, fight for Terrapins. Keep on fighting till we win. So sing our song as we go marching along to victory.
Okay.
It's almost Iowa.
Okay, but I'm gonna call Iowa out on this because Maryland is literally saying fight, fight, fight for Maryland. Iowa's fight song is, quote, fight, fight, fight for Iowa, quote. So the Iowa fight song is quoting somebody else saying fight, 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 where Maryland is literally saying fight, fight, fight. They win it. They're the fight songs. Maryland takes the cake for me. Also, they got a fight on in there, so that's fun.
Yeah. 10 notable alumni. 10 notable Terps. Larry David! He's a Terp! Never in a million years. If you were to ask me where did Larry David go to college, I never would have said Maryland. I would have been like, Florida? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maryland! Jim Henson, the Muppets guy?
Yeah.
Bunch of news and sports reporters. Connie Chung, Gail King, famously Oprah's bestie. Greg Wyshynski, one of my favorite podcasters. Bonnie Bernstein, Tim Kirkjian, ESPN, along with Scott Van Pelt from SportsCenter. The guy who founded Under Armour, of course, Maryland, is the Under Armour school. Oregon is the Nike school. Maryland, the Under Armour school. And then famous footballers, Boomer Esiason, Vernon Davis, and Stephon Diggs. Alicia, what is your perception of Maryland fans? Any of them? Anything?
I know that Chris Trevino from USCFootball.com is from Maryland.
Yeah.
He is the only I think he's a Maryland fan.
Yeah.
And
Big Terp guy.
He's the only one that I've ever interacted with. My interaction has been positive, but also limited.
The only Maryland fan thing I can think of is the Streeter versus Amir prank war. There was that game in which Streeter pranked Amir into thinking that he had won the half court shot. That was in a Maryland game.
Okay.
First athlete that comes to mind when you think of Maryland. For me, it's Bear Bryant. I thought he was there longer. Only 1 year as a Maryland head coach. He started his head coaching career at Maryland.
Honestly, Maryland football is, to me, nameless, faceless dudes running around in really underrated uniforms that are awesome when they feature the Maryland flag, and everyone seems to hate them, but I love them.
Under Armour jerseys are ass, except for Maryland.
But somehow they knock Maryland out of the park every time. But Taulia Tagovailoa is the one I can name because he's Tua Tagovailoa's brother.
And he's no longer there.
Let's
talk about the current Terps. Well, first of all, before we get to the current Terps, they have one national title in 1953, 9 ACC titles, but hadn't won one since 2001 under Ralph Regan. They've never played USC. They've never won a Big Ten title. USC and Maryland will play this year, October 19th, at Maryland. The only USC-Maryland connection that I think is worth mentioning, Antoine Perez. Famed USC recruiting bust, transferred to Maryland and had a pretty decent career.
That's cool.
Yeah, Antoine Perez. The Terps, coached by Mike Locksley, going into his fifth year. They were 8-5 last year, fourth in Big Ten East. Played Ohio State and Michigan really tough. Yeah. Really tough. But I think this is what Maryland is. They play teams tough, but zero wins against ranked Big Ten teams in 10 seasons. So they're sort of lacking that big win. The only big wins over ranked teams that they've had, they beat Texas a couple of times at a home and home, but lacking that big win. Going into this year, 45th in SP Plus, 13 returning starters, 5 on offense. They lose Tagovailoa, who's off to the NFL, went undrafted. They also lost star linebacker Jayshon Barham to Michigan and tight end Rico Walker to Auburn. So, that's where they stand. It's an interesting team. I think Maryland is always someone who can be pesky. But like I said, they've lacked that ability to sort of land the final punch there on a team.
That's my perception of Maryland. I often tune into Maryland games where they're giving a ranked team a game, they're not.
Purdue?
Yeah, because they never actually do the upset. Yeah.
Purdue will land the upset. And then maybe not do anything besides that.
Yeah, but Maryland just...
Maryland's just a very chalky team.
They're close, and then it just sort of falls away.
Yeah, Maryland's not a bad football program. They're going to beat up on the teams below them, but they're not necessarily going to punch above their weight. We'll see what happens when the Trojans and the Terps meet on October 19th.
Look at Jesse getting some screen time.
Yeah, and look at my timing.
Look at you.
Yeah. Solid. Solid, solid, solid. All right, let's get to the mailbag.
You've got mail.
All right, let's get to a question we got here on YouTube. Sarah and Aaron says, was SC's ability to close on recruits / transfers impacted by some of the protest chaos?
That's a really good question. It's something I hadn't thought of. I don't think that USC was doing recruiting weekends that weekend anyways, because it was graduation those weekends. So I don't know. I have not heard anything about it being...
I will say that it was, from the USC perspective, a lot of this was about USC, but also that stuff was happening everywhere.
Yeah, UCLA had stuff.
All over the country too. Yeah. So like, I don't know that any negative impact that SC would have had would have been unique to SC in that instance.
I was just thinking logistically, because they were limiting who was coming out in and out of campus. But but also like the recruits and stuff, I feel like they are being chauffeured around by people and probably would have been able to. So I don't know that would have disrupted the recruiting infrastructure all that much.
Yeah. Sean from Budavox in Texas says, what are your thoughts on the EA game coming back, and how do I get into that dynasty? I am so beyond pumped. We saw the trailer come out last week. I've got the day circled on my calendar. I got to get that Madden college football
the pre-order
bundle. Yeah, got to get that all ready and locked in. I'm pumped.
I am so excited. If you haven't already listened or watched the trailer remix where somebody put it to Fix You by Coldplay, go do that, because you will be absolutely just through the roof pumped after watching that. I cannot wait. I am so excited. The only thing that is limiting my over-the-top excitement is the lingering fear I have that it will just be a Madden reskin.
They're saying that it plays quicker than Madden.
I hope so, because I hate Madden, and I will not be buying the Madden bundle. I will be buying College Football 25, because that is what I want to play. I do not want to play Madden, so if they've just reskinned Madden, they can go kick rocks. But until I experience that, I'm super, super excited. We've already sort of been discussing, leagues and stuff like that, what teams we're going to do. I would be totally game to do a rot league if other, you know, online dynasty, if other people are interested in that, or maybe the one with our friends, maybe we'll infringe upon that by adding more, you know, rot bots if people are interested. I don't know. Either way, we're gonna be playing with you guys. We have so many big plans for this. I'm pumped.
I'm in our league with our friends. I think I've already picked my team. James Madison. Go Dukes, baby.
For right now, I think I'm leaning towards San Jose State, but I reserve the right to change that once I get
What's your rationale on picking the Spartans?
Okay, if I hadn't gone to USC, my two other, the two other schools that, like, when I did a college tour that really stuck with me were, San Luis Obispo, SLO, and San Jose State. I don't know that I would have ever gone.
Cal Poly not in the game this year because there's no FCS schools.
No. Well, that sucks. I don't know that I would have ever gone to San Jose State, but I really, really liked San Jose as a city. Mm-hmm. My brother ended up going to Santa Clara, and I loved visiting him and going up there and being in that region. And they're the Spartans, which feels sort of tangential to the Trojans. And I have a liking for San Jose State.
You know what San Jose feels like? Mm. Irvine, but yeah. Just a little older and a little bigger.
Yeah, I can see that.
Sterile.
I sterility.
Like the South Bay of the Bay Area, but like San Jose itself, boring.
Yeah, but
Mountain View, cool.
No, Palo Alto, just chill. Cool. San Jose is like chill. It's
sterile. I'm picking James Madison because it's all about uniforms, so it had to be a Nike school, had to be a G5. And purple's my favorite color. It made sense. They got great uniforms. They're a Nike school with my colors. Yeah, absolutely. They've TCU was always roster. The school that I thought I would pick, but we're going all G5. So
yeah,
give me James Madison. James Madison. I do worry it's going to be like a 3-star program or something, and which is kind of taboo because you want like 2 stars or below. But yeah. James Madison's only been in FBS for what, 1 year?
Yeah,
they can't be that high. So.
I have zero doubts that San Jose State will be a 2-star.
Oh, absolutely.
They will not be a 3-star. My worry is, are they a 1-star? I genuinely don't know.
They might be,
and I don't want to put myself at that disadvantage. But have you seen that the thing that I think is really cool where they've talked about how you will feel the difference between a 5-star player and a 2-star player when you're playing with them.
That's like, I like that.
I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out.
I wonder if that's going to be like FIFA, where they have body types.
Yeah.
Like you use Mbappe, and like Mbappe just feels so different from like a crappy player like Luis Diaz or something like that. What?
Shut your mouth about crappy players.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna wrap it up there. We'll be back next week. Next week in the Big Ten Minutes, we're doing Michigan. So come join us for that. Best fight song in the history of sports. And so much more Michigan stuff. A lot of stuff to pack into 10 minutes. I don't know if we're going to be able to fit the Unabomber. We'll have to see. So until join us next time. Until then, email address, RaiderTroyFansNet.com. Phone number, 818-643-7227. Don't forget to sign up for DraftKings with the code Rain of Troy, and we'll see you next time. Until then, see ya.
See ya.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.